Okay?
Yeah.
So I put on the microphone just for having this recorded, so those who aren't here can watch it later on. Or you can go back as well if I end up talking too fast, which I usually end up doing. Now, what we're going to talk about today is writing reports. And it's both a kind of a general presentation I have, writing reports in general. It's partly a specific one, talking about the reports in this course. And we may ask, why talking about it? I mean, you've been writing lots of reports already. And somehow, writing reports doesn't necessarily mean that you are good at doing it unless you get feedback, unless we talk about and kind of raise the bar and the expectations keep increasing throughout your studies and throughout our experience in writing reports. So I'll also talk a little bit about reflection, which is part of what you're going to do in this course. So I have two other good report writers down up here, so probably they will catch it and add a little bit to what I'm saying. My plan is to talk about the general part, which is the structure, the content, and this presentation and the slides that you find on the Confluence page, I uploaded already in the PDF, to find there, has been a kind of a ball play between Ivar and myself. So he started, I continued, then he started, I continued. So it's been going back and forth a little bit. Then we'll talk also a little bit about writing style and typography, because the quality of your writing is also important. You may like it or not, but it is important. Where should I be standing to avoid that kind of feedback? We will, in the final part, talk specifically about the Applied Computer Science Project Report, which is the one that you're going to be writing most immediately, I guess. It's always good to start thinking about what is the purpose? Why are we writing reports? And this is a little bit as when we develop code. Why do we develop code? We would like to solve somebody else's problem. When we write a report, we know what we did, but somebody else would like to know. So there is a reader there. There is somebody else there. And so every report has an intended audience. So what then is the audience for your Applied Computer Science Project report? Well, could be. I don't have had many students asking for Applied Computer Science Project reports before, but every year there are at least two examiners who are quite eager to read. So the main audience might be actually the examiners, and they are looking for evidence in the report that you have met the expected learning outcomes. So that's the idea. And in these projects, you are supposed to report the outcome. Sometimes just the outcome, meaning just what you developed. Sometimes the real purpose of the report is not technical outcome output, but it's actually what you learned from it, or how you organize things, or what you experienced, other than just making the code. And this is Applied Computer Science Project is like that. You develop a product, not because the product is terribly important by itself, but it's only through developing a product you can get into the get experiences, get into the cases and the setups that we would like you to experience and the tools we would like you to use. So, in the report, you would like to see answering the question, why was this done? In your case, that's pretty easy. So remember on the report to state what course this is reporting. It's easy to forget, but the report should say, why was this done? What's the motivation? In your case, also a little bit about the motivation for the climbing log, the gliding tracks, the mother system or information. What's the motivation for doing it? And you need to describe what you did. And how you did it, what you achieved and what conclusions. We're going to come back to that specifics of the applied computer science project, because in that case also the process is very important. So achievements and conclusions will partly be on technology and partly on the actual process, the way you worked. It shouldn't be a narrative. I got the feedback once I submitted that paper to a journal that it was like a Marco Polo paper. You know Marco Polo, he went from island to island, he met people here and there and did everything. So if you write it that way, going through from sprint one to sprint six, you describe what we did, then we did, then we did, then we did, then we did. That's not what we're looking for. We look for more like the final result, more like the moments of significance. And usually not in a temporal order, more like in a topical order. So think about it. The purpose is not to write your way through the project. The purpose is to write about what you learned. And that means that you take a different perspective. Sometimes it means that you need to write a little bit of chronology, a little bit of what happened in what sequence and why and what actions we're taking. But that in that case, it has a specific purpose to explain the chain of actions, to explain the reasoning for certain decisions. You've probably seen this before in a scientific report. I mean, you have two types. You have the small, the short reports, and you have these big books. And they are a little bit different. The books have appendices and lots of, typically more to it. But in the shorter version, and this is what you will have, you typically have a title. So please make sure that your report has a title, not just the name of the course. That's not the title of a project. So give it a title and write clearly who was behind, and not just group, real names. Get used to it. The work has a title and they have a name. Then, and we'll go through these parts later on, you have a short abstract that summarizes what you think are the major conclusions and contributions. A little bit of background, a little bit of how you went forward, your results, a short discussion, or might be large discussion, because in this case, that's the discussion is the most important part. That's your contribution. Everything else is you describe what you did, but that's your analysis comes in there. And then conclusion. And we typically have references. In your case, in this project, there may not be too many references, because this is not a project in which you tend to have a lot of literature to read. In the spring integration project, you will have much longer reference list. Any questions about the general structure? Sorry.
Example of references, could that be all this code that we have been using?
Absolutely. So the question was whether references you should refer if you used other people's code. Definitely. So references could be to code. It could also be to some technologies that you use, some methodologies. If you use a specific variant of some workflow, it might be that you refer to a place where that's being described. If you use a specific technology, if you, for your cylinders, you use an algorithm that's proposed by somebody else, you refer to it. So anything you use that you found somewhere else that you're going to be basing your work on, then you need to you need to credit them. And secondly, you credit and you leave some of the responsibility to them, saying that, okay, if you think it's good work, then you don't have to repeat their arguments. You could just leave it for them to argue by having somebody else go there and see how they did it and why they can conclude. So a little bit of both. But definitely, if you use anything that you find anywhere else, it should be credited. So this is sometimes called the hourglass model. So you tend to start wide with what is the general introduction, why are we doing this, and then you can't solve the whole problem, so you typically solve some smart part of it. You're already seeing that you're not going to come through all the user stories, so what you're going to do is much smaller than what you could do and what you set up to do. So because of that, what you did is... it's going to be smaller, and that's where you have to describe the methodology, that's where you describe the results. But in your discussion, when you come to the point where you would like to discuss and conclude, you would like to make a conclusion that is broader than just the small parts. You would like to say something about the larger project, not just the part of it you implemented. You could say something about, given your experience, you could say more about the total project, the parts you didn't touch, you could say more about it as well. So tend to start broad. We do a little bit narrow because depending on time and resources, and then you try to widen out in discussion to make a large impact as possible. If you have questions, you just stop me in the middle. It's interesting. So I said that when you write reports, we have an intended audience. And you have been reading quite a lot of papers. So how do you go forward if you're looking for something and you find a stack of papers and you would like to read the papers? How do you go forward to read the paper? Do you start on the first page on every paper?
Title and abstract. If that sounds interesting, I will just go like scroll through. Not really on
the headings.
Maybe the headings. Maybe you go through the conclusions, see what are the major conclusions. But you rarely start from the beginning and reading it all through. Title first, and then abstract, and then maybe conclusion, and then the overall paper. And if you find that there is enough interest, then you read it all. And that's so because of that, when you write your paper, it should be easy from the title to understand what it's all about so that you can entice the interested reader. And then the abstract should really tell what is the most surprising or the most important contribution so that you have your reader. Because if you say, in this paper, we're going to talk about this and this and this and this, the reader is like, okay, are they going to talk about it or are they going to tell me, so we may not be reading any further. Title. So try to make a title that is as specific and conveys the most important. So if you say the title is a report in IMD 4886 Applied Computer Science Project, it's not very good. Be specific about the project, about what you developed. So if you think about this paper, I mean, the audience of this paper would be the examiners. The examiners couldn't care less about searching because they get all your reports. It's going to be on Inspera, so they're going to find it there. So there's nothing much to worry about. but it's, in general, you would like to have a title that will show up. So make sure it has the important parts of the problem in there. Because the title is the part of your report that's going to be read by most people. Not in your case, since the examiners will have to read everything anyway. So, but in general. You should and you must have the author list. In your case, you don't have to, but otherwise it's typical to include where you work, where you are affiliated. And then a date. Because we like to refer to paper, refer to piece of work, and if you revise it, you may have the same authors and a similar title, but maybe a different revision, a different publication date. So date is important. In this abstract, if you go to this PDF, you can follow the link to the A Scrutiny of the Abstract. It's a very nice little short little PDF about the abstract. It was actually written or published in the Bulletin of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. So and a pretty old paper. They show a bad abstract, and they have a short paper, and they conclude by talking about a good abstract. Read it. It's quite short, but I think it's quite eye-opening, and it illustrates some of the dilemmas and some of the issues. So, read this one. It's still really surprising to see how many of these type of abstracts you see. They talk a lot about what they're gonna do, But what did they learn? There's not a single word. So they are quoting dictionary definitions of abstract. But do they say anything about what's typical with these definitions? Do they say anything about why the abstract is important? No, they don't give you any clue as to what they learn. Just saying what they're going to do. And I don't know about Jung or Rich and Christopher, but that still so many of these types of abstracts.
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
There's an easy mitigation, right? Easy mitigation strategy, just write the abstract at the end, right? So then you have the insight from the abstract, right?
That's the thing. I mean, the abstract should be the last thing you write. When you write your conclusion, the conclusion should be the basis for the abstract. The abstract should conclude or summarize the conclusion. But you need a little bit of text to describe the motivation and everything, and then summarize the conclusion. So this is what I suggest as a simple sample good abstract from the same paper.
It motivates and summarizes.
This one, can you say anything about what they suggest, what they command, what they learn? No. Here, well, they have numbers. They say something about the importance by numbers, and they say something about what to avoid and what it should contain, which is much more specific, much more what they actually learn. So try to think about the abstract. Abstract is very important. And I think that I often recommend to students to write the bullet points for the conclusion, what you would like to conclude, and make sure that the report leads to it, and make sure that the abstract summarizes what's in that the main part of the conclusion. There's also a scrutiny of the introduction, and typically the introduction has three parts: the review, the claim, and the agenda. The review is kind of setting the stage, saying, okay, where are we? What are we doing here? And it's saying very briefly something about what is the most relevant papers in the field. And the it should leave up to the claims. It's kind of drawing the picture, surrounding picture, the environment. And it should lead up to claim. And the claim is the most important part. And it explains why you are doing this. You may use some pronouns here. In general, we don't like pronouns in technical papers, but if you would like to do them, it could be here. And the claim would be, in your case, would be to say, okay, let's take the rock climbing. The rock climbing instructors, they need to renew. There's a problem. And we would like to develop something for these poor guys who lack something. So that's your claim. The claim is that there is a problem. It's important. We have established that. We look at what is the area, what is the work there, and we claim that, okay, if we can develop this great system, then it will help the users. And then it leads up to the agenda, because what is the agenda? It's just saying, okay, now how in this report, how are you going to address the issues? How are you going to go through to make sure that we get the results? And you've probably seen at the end of an introduction, in chapter 1 we do this, in chapter 2 we do this, in chapter 3 we do this. In general, that's kind of a boring way of writing it. So if you can write it in more plain text, then it will be easier, or not easier, but it will be more interesting to read. So in the review, we talk about what these other guys did and did not. And we claim that we are looking into something that nobody else has. We are suggesting something that no one has done before. We do it in a different way. And then we say that, okay, what we've done in this part is that we set up a project in which we developed this, and we did it this way to learn this, and then you have your setup. In your case, of course, the claim would also have to link to the expected learning outcome. because you're expected to use tools and methodologies for a certain type of projects. So some of your claims will have to be linked to that. No, no. You should try to avoid. But what is said here is that if you will allow it in any place in the report, it will be in this part. But usually you won't see it at all. Usually, or in technical reports, we try to avoid.
Yeah.
But if you want to use it in the report, it could be here. But in general, try to keep it neutral if you can. Although passive voice is boring and complex, so it's a bit of a balance. So this is where you do the background work, literature review relevant to your research. In this case, there may not be so much relevant literature, unless you've used a specific, if you found that you have a specific Scrum you use, or you use Git in a special way, then you may refer to the literature in which these methodologies are described, or use some other tool in addition to the tools here. But in general, you will like this time to write up the state of the art. And this is the part where you have the most external references. It's in this part. So you don't typically have references in the discussions or in conclusions. You should have, if you need a reference, it's because it's related. And if it's related, it should be in the background. Something that happened already before. And then you can repeat the reference again when you discuss it. But it should have been presented already in the background part. And this is also important. Keep in mind that you are not writing a textbook. What you're doing is that you are communicating with experts in the field. So you don't include references that everyone would know in that profession. And my recommendation is for you, is to, when you think about the audience, think of the audience being as one of you before you started the project. So the typical reader here would be one that has entered the master's program with a previous bachelor degree in computer science. So anything a general computer science bachelor student will know, you don't have to repeat it. You could just assume that that's known. But what you learned in this project that you didn't know from before, you would possibly most likely need to explain it. So if you think of it yourself as, what did I know before coming here? And you don't have to explain everything that is, what Scrum is. No, we can assume Scrum is known. You can say Scrum or Kanban. What you're going to say is that, are you going to use Scrum, Kanban, combination? And how do you implement it? That's important, not the general definition of what it is, because you can assume it's known. And don't bring in a lot of work that you're not going to discuss, you're not going to relate to. It's just be showing that you have read lots of papers. No, we don't want to know that you've been reading a lot. We want to know the things you read, how they had an impact on your work. That's the important part. And in the background part, you don't go into details about what you did. You don't talk about your project well, because the background is the background. It's kind of what is there without your project. And so it's very tempting to start saying, but we did these things. No, in the background, no. It's just background. And then you describe your part, and then you discuss how that's different from background. But keep it independent, more or less, from what you did. Because otherwise it's very hard to follow discussion. It's much better to have this as just a state, description of the state, and then you can go in the discussion later on. And when you then go into later parts of your report, you can assume that the reader knows what you described in the background. Sometimes you may need to refer back, say, as we discussed in chapter so-and-so, there is some technology or there are some tools. You may have cross-references within the document, but typically you can just assume that it's known. Methods. You need to describe what you did in quite details. And especially in your case, you need to have enough details about quality assurance, testing, security, all the topics that we covered. How have you incorporated those issues into your process, into your methodology? Whenever you made a change, try to say, or you choose something, try to say why. What did you choose, why? And also, why? What are the alternatives, and why did you not go with the alternatives? So that we can reproduce and say that it's not just, you didn't get to the results just by pure luck. It was a good process in which you had good alternatives and or relevant alternatives, and you chose the best. Results. Now here comes a little bit of the challenge, because results, you would like to include results so that you, the reader can appreciate and understand what you did. But the problem is that if you provide the results in full extent, then the reader is going to be sleeping halfway through it. It's just too much. So somehow you need to make it smaller. You need to aggregate. You need to filter. But then the question is, how can you do that without affecting the or having an impact of the resulting data? So because, I mean, in discussion, you're going to discuss. But in the results, you would like to show data without you having too much of an impact on how data can be understood. But we need to do a bit of aggregation, and need to do a bit of filtering. So at least you need to be very clear on what parts you don't go in detail describing. And when you aggregate, make sure that aggregation is not biased anyway. Try to make just a pure aggregation, counting, making statistics, but try to avoid any form of aggregation that is providing a biased view of the data or your experiences. So, and it's okay to leave things out in an appendix. In your case, one of the issues would be, should you submit a lot of code? No, this is not a coding course per se, but it may be that you refer to Git, your Git, and you may go into a little bit of general architecture description, which an architecture or a class diagram, class hierarchy, could be a kind of a summary of your code, which is unbiased because it's a class hierarchy. It doesn't you don't necessarily show a biased view of your code by showing the class hierarchy. Figures may be good, but make sure that they have a purpose, that they're just there to fill up space, and also that figures aren't biased, especially there are ways to use figures that will kind of suggest something that's not true, and be aware that you don't do that. I don't know if you... Do we have a pen? Yeah. So, I mean, if you have... You're probably seeing this. If you have bars going like this, and if you cut it here, so you delete this part out, then it doesn't help that you say one there. It looks like big differences between this one and this one, even though the differences are much smaller. So try to avoid any graphic presentation that would kind of show a biased view of your data. And for the technicalities, let the figures float. Don't force them in one place. Let the document handling system decide where figures end up. Don't fight that. Use figure captions explaining each one figure, and they should always be below the figure. Make sure that you only use figures that you can legally use. If you find figures everywhere, make sure that you have the permission to reprint them and reuse the figures. This is hopefully mostly new, or no, known stuff, sorry, not new to you. This should be well known, I hope. But every year we have issues, so it's good to remind you. And go through these slides before submitting the report and see if you can check out all the bullet points here. Discussion is the most important part of the document, because that's where you say, okay, this is what we saw, this is what we observed. Now, what can we learn from it? And that is a very active process. And that's a process in which you analyze, and that is a very important. So you should discuss your contributions and then related to what has been done before in general. In your case, you need to discuss not just what you did, but also what you learned from doing it. How that, how you tweaked and what you saw and what you learned from tweaking parameters in your project. So, the structure we're suggesting is also often called IMRAD, Introduction, Methodology, Results, and Discussion. If you take the eye away, then you have a challenge. If you have worked on several things, you have the challenge. Are you going to write the methodology for all your the activities? And then the results for all the activities, and then the discussion for all the activities? Or are you going to have one chapter where you start by saying, this is one part of the project, this is how I set it up, this is what we found, this is what we concluded, or what we can discuss. And then you have another chapter in which you take another part of the project. So, one case. You start by having the first case. You say, this is methodology, result, discussion. And then the second case, methodology, result, discussion. And if you have a front-end, back-end that are very separate, might be that you say a little bit about the front-end independently. This is how you develop the front-end methodology. This is the tools you use. This is what you learn. And then the back-end, one by one. But you can also say, okay, now the methodology was very much the same. So let's say how we developed the system. And then, of course, you go a little bit, but in the front-end case, we did a little bit here, and the back-end case, so you have a special chapter saying a little bit about the differences to the general. And then same with the results, you describe the total result, and then a little bit about the specifics of the front-end, a little bit about the back-end, and final discussion. And the thing is that you can't say which is better until you look at the actual project. Because some projects, the activities are very separate, so it makes sense to describe them separately. In the other projects, they are very tightly bound, and the methodology and the results are very, it's natural to discuss them across the activities. In that case, this is a better approach. So, and that goes to most of it. It's very tempting for you to ask a supervisor, so how should the structure be? And I don't know about you, Marius and Christopher, but when I get the question, I say, I can't answer. You have to. It depends on your project. It depends. So you have to come up with something that you think is good. And we can read that. We can say, oh, it wasn't so good, or okay, it's good. Because it's impossible to come up with the good structure without knowing the project. And you know the project. So you, the important thing is that you know what you would like to communicate. And you would like to make it as easy as possible to the reader to grasp your contribution. So I usually describe it this way, that a happy examiner is a good examiner. And if the examiner can read your report quickly and understand what you did, he's going to be happy. So what you're aiming at is a happy examiner. They tend to be a good examiners for you. So making sure that the reader can grasp your contribution. So choose a structure that is helping you or helping the reader to really understand what you did. If it's too complex, then they're going to be struggling and then they're going to be less happy. Is that right?
Happy.
Happy. So you don't like that word happy?
No. It's good. So I'm just thinking about sometimes you can make things, people happy if you make things overly simple, right? So it invites to perhaps remove contentious aspects of the project that would spark discussion as opposed to making it easy reason happy. So
absolutely a good point. So it's not, happiness is not the ultimate goal. I mean, you need to make sure that the report contains everything that it's supposed to contain. I mean, the most important part here is that it shows the contributions, and as you said, if there are any controversies or any weaknesses in your work, you need to present that as well. Even though it would be simpler to drop it, no. It needs to be have all the content, but given that all the content is there, the easier it is to read, to grasp the content, the better it is. Yeah, sure.
When I read reports, what I want to see is what hasn't been done mostly, right? Because very easy to say what has been done. Everyone is pretty good at this because that's the default report you would write. I did this and this and this in a non-reflective way. But reflection also forces you to identify, you know, how far did you push it or did you not push it? And that's really one thing I probably would look at first. That really nearly.
Yeah, I agree. So the what you didn't do and describe why you didn't do it. There are good arguments and not so good arguments for the why. But talk to your supervisor about why, because it's of course one of the most important constraints in our project is the time constraint. So one of the most used and acceptable why you didn't do something is because of time constraint. But then you kind of need to convince the reader that you spent the time well on other higher priority issues.
Yeah, one comment about the structure is that you shouldn't get hang out too much too early on the structure. Just dump it and then refactor it. So once you have the story and once you know what needs to be in the report, you can reorganize it. So you can restructure it. Mm. So restructuring a document is easier than coming up with a perfect structure up front. Mm.
So a comment about don't be afraid of just writing and then refactoring and add structure later on. Also because it's kind of iterative. You may not be able to define the best structure in the beginning because only after you see how this is heading can you know what it is. And the good thing these days is that refactoring a document is very trivial. I mean, you take a block of text from here and put it there. It's very easy. So don't be afraid of it. And don't worry about structure. Get it down. Write it. And then when you have it all written, it's much easier to see how you can structure it in a good way. Conclusion. Should summarize your major findings and to what degree your claims were fulfilled and what possible what possible limitations it could be, because there are sometimes some limitations there, so you may also need to elaborate on that. And of course, conclusion should be natural outcome of the discussion. Discussion should be good based, or should be the relevant in terms of the results, and the results should have been gathered through a methodology that is proper. So these things need to be leading all up to a conclusion that is well grounded. That's what we look for. So. And sometimes I would see in the conclusion some loose discussions. So you did something, and you implemented something, and then in the conclusion you have a long paragraph discussing what you could have done and what you should have done and what was the reason why, without any grounding in your discussion or in your data. So or what you did. So try to avoid coming up with conclusions that are not firmly based on your discussion and data you had. And then summarize quickly, briefly, what would be a natural next step? What would somebody who would like to continue the work, what should they do? Where would they start? What could they possibly do? In your case, it would be because most of you will have kind of a prototype project. And if the product owner would like to take this to the next step, it would be very interesting to know for the product owner to know what they should do, what they should focus on, what should be the next step. References. There are different standards, styles for references. We are not so worried about which one you choose, but the advantage of choosing a standard, a style, will be that you remember to include everything. And then everything is who, meaning who were the authors, what was the title of the work? Where was it published? When was it published? So that based on this, we can find the work. Anyone reading this will be able to find the work. So make sure that all these parts are there. And the best way to do that is to use a standard way of referencing. I'm not going to say so much about which standard.
Reference managing, LaTeX. I mean, the point is, sure. I have no clue about how to cite properly anymore. Text doing it for me, so I don't have to worry if it's Harvard or IEEE standard or whatever else.
It's defined by the style.
So exactly, right? So delegate this burden to your bibliography tool. Don't think about it yourself anymore, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. There's so many tools. And the other advantage there is that once you start collecting interesting paper, you're going to end up finding that you will have to refer to them more times. And then they're already there. You have them in their BibTeX or their EndNotes or whatever you use. And then you can just pull them up whenever you want to. You don't think about that too much now, but you would regret in the future that you didn't start early. That's the thing. Yeah, okay. So there was something about the known styles. But we're not going to enforce it. And as Christopher was saying, it's typically when you write a paper, you choose a style, and the style will also include the reference styles that you choose. So an extended structure, then you may have a preface, table of contents, list of figures. So when you write your master thesis, this is more the type of style you're going to have. So it's the same core, but there's going to be more around. More in the introduction, or the preface and the table of contents and list of everything, and also maybe acknowledges and appendices will typically be there in larger reports. Yeah, put all details that are not important for understanding your work, but this kind of would be interesting to those who would like to go more depth, put them in appendices. Yeah, so this goes a little bit back to, or an extension to what Marius was saying. So what order do you write your report? Are you going to start with the introduction and write everything? I think you can jump back and forth. Write where you feel right now that this needs to be written, or this is something that concerns you, or you just want to get it out. It is a bad idea to write too much in the conclusion too early, or the abstract too early. But you can start doing a little bit and then modify it and change it and everything often. But write where you feel that it would help your flow of writing more than starting from the part that you may not like so much.
And one of the conclusions that, at least for master's students, I tend to say that a lot because the document is very large, but if you have a good conclusion or a good discussion or a good insight that you gain in the process, just write one line in your conclusion section so you don't forget the idea. Right, so you need to do some sort of idea management, meaning no structure, just know, I need to pick this up again because it's probably very essential. And 2 weeks later, you have no clue anymore. I don't know.
Yeah.
Perhaps you're clever, you don't need this, but.
No, but I agree in that you may, since everything is going to lead up to the conclusion, it may be a good idea to keep the conclusion as a bullet list of things you want to discuss and you think you learn. So it might actually, when you get to write the report in this course as well, it may be that you look at the expected learning outcomes, and for each one of them, you try to say, okay, what can we say about this? What did we learn about this? What is our conclusion on these things? How do we do? And then you have the bullet points, and then from there on, you write everything, and these are reminders. Okay, the conclusion needs to be based on discussion. Discussion needs to be based on results. Results needs to be based on description. And then you see, okay, there's a bullet point here. I haven't discussed it. So then you add a discussion. And you say, oh, where are the results I would like to discuss? No, you didn't. So you need to describe that. And then how did you set it up? Oh, I forgot to write that as well. Then you get backwards to make sure that you can support the claim. So typically, maybe have a draft for the conclusion, write the content of the reports, possibly a little bit chapter outlines, starting with the conclusion, then the discussion, then the results, then the methodology, and start by having, people are different. Some like to, I have it all in my head, I need to sit down and write it from A to Z, but I think that technology people tend to be more like me, that, okay, we need that overview first, we need that outline and all the chapters and see the structure, and then we can fill in the details. And then abstract and title will be the final thing. So don't worry about, so that goes for everything. For your master thesis, for the report here, you may want to have a title early on. You may be asked for an early title. Don't worry about changing the title, because the title should reflect your work. So if you find that your work is changing from your initial idea to the end, then your title needs to change as well. Don't be too worried about changing the title. It should be the most appropriate one for the actual report, and that you don't know until you finalize the report. Yeah, writing style and typography. try to be clear and concise. Try to make a common thread of thoughts, so it's easy to follow you, so you don't jump here and there and everywhere, and try to structure it well. And information density is the most important part. It's not the amount of information. I mean, sometimes you think that, okay, the longer the report, the more details, the more information is there, the better. No, because think about the reader. The reader would like to know the essential part in as little time as possible. The reader doesn't want to sit reading all night just because you wrote this in 20 pages rather than the 4 pages you could have. So make sure that it's, you have high information density. Information density is what you optimize, not the number of pages. So I'm quite sure that all of you will come to me or Dipti and ask, so how many pages should the report be? And our favorite answer is, we don't know. It depends on the report or your work. But I would usually also then say, okay, a typical report might be 20 pages or 25, or depending on the subject. So, because, I mean, you know that you need to write a conclusion, you need to write a discussion, and you need to describe the project outcome, you need to describe your process, what you did, and how you set it up, and what you learned, and then, yeah, 20, 30 pages might be. But size doesn't matter. It should be the size that is the right one for your report or for your work. When you get to the towards the end, try to make sure that you don't repeat yourself many places throughout the document or report. Gather together everything that is related to one discussion and conclude it there and then. Don't use lots of inflated words just to make it very big or enormously big. Or, I mean, if it's big, it's big. So, especially when it goes to adjectives and adverbs, try to avoid putting in lots of words just to make it sound larger or more important. We are not in the Instagram SMS world here. We write complete sentences. Language. Try to make it as professional sounding as possible, because you would like to demonstrate that you know this technical area, you have insight, you are well trained, well educated, and if your report is very sloppy, then the reader may start wondering whether your work is equally sloppy. Slang, humor, colloquial styles, try to avoid them. Although I usually say that in the end, if you follow all these guidelines, your report might be terribly boring to read. That's not good either. So sometimes, on purpose, you may break some of them, but know why you're breaking these general recommendations and know what the effect would be. Abbreviations, if you need to use abbreviations, try to make sure that you define them the first time and also keep a list of abbreviations. I mean, we tend to use abbreviations all the time, and it makes reading hard, especially for those who are not very well read in our area. And vary sentence length and structure a little bit so it's not too boring. For writing, we suggest using the English, not the American, but the English, and then there is a European style guide, and I suggest you go there and see how you're supposed to write numbers, how you're supposed to write various types of constructs in language. So look it up. It's quite useful to go. It's big, though, so I think none of you are going to read it from start to end. But if you wonder about, how should you write this in a good way, then look it up there. Typography. Don't use too long lines. Typically, we recommend using a style. It's a document style, a report style. And then these things will be managed by the document system. Make sure that you have enough space to make it readable. As I said, if you have templates, then they will take care of fonts and space and everything. Not try to be too creative with fonts. In English, titles tend to be capitalized, and also cross-references that we have. Figure 1 with capital and chapter 6 with capital C. So we try to capitalize, because these are names of chapters and figures. Kind of. Now, quickly, you're not falling completely asleep. Almost, yeah. Well, then just and as I said, the, you know that the slides are there. Look them up. That's the most important thing. I'm just going to show you a little bit of, give a little bit of that overview so that you get started in the right direction. But when you get to the details, you most likely want to go back and look at the details. So, the main purpose, as I said already, is to show to the examiners that you have acquired the expected learning outcomes or the skills and knowledge described in the expected learning outcome. So go through, take a look at it already. I would recommend that after today, what you do is you go to the course description and look at the expected learning outcome and say, okay, did we properly address this in the project so far? Because if you haven't done it in the project, you can't discuss much and you can't show that you learned it. So you need to make sure that your project is aligned with what's expected there. So we do it now because you still have one sprint for doing things that you could help you even better demonstrate to achieve the learning outcomes. And the audience will be examiners, maybe students interested in the topic and may continue work on the project. Or interested in technology, and maybe future employers. Maybe you bring it along and say, okay, look at this project that we did. Interesting project, and it shows my skill as a team member and shows my experience with the methodology. So it could be. But the main one, the one we know for sure would be interested, would be the examiners. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this now. You look at it. These are learning outcomes. You find it on the form of course pages. And go through and read, and make sure, or try to make sure that you address, and you have done in the project. You have done it the way that you can show what you learned and that you acquire this. Just a little bit on how I would like to see the report, and also, I mean, this is something that we should do, whatever we do in projects, and this is what you should do every retrospective. This is what you try to. I don't know if you have to do that properly, but this is how we should see it. So, first reflection. If you want to learn from something, then we should probably do it this way. So the first thing is to actually do something. I mean, you develop code. You use tools. You try to solve problems. You try to communicate. So you do something. And the retrospective is, okay, what happened? This is what we did. Now what happened? Well, this guy, we were never able to get that guy to be included, or we ended up having too many merge conflicts, or things happen in your project. No one took lead. So we try to describe what happened and what was the consequence, what were the results of that. Oops. Then the question is, so what? What does this imply? And this is what you try to do here, okay? So how do you take care of, or how do we, when you see that the breakdown chart isn't all the way. So why did this happen? Was it because we didn't estimate well enough? Was it because the tasks were too big? What was the reason? And what was the and what is the implication of this? And then one thing might be that, okay, the implication is that we have too large tasks or we are too inexperienced in estimation or whatever it might be. And also, that's important, how did I influence the outcome? It's easy to say that it failed because this didn't happen and that technology came late and we didn't have all these users that we wanted to do and everything. But what did we individually do that changed the had an impact? Because that it's easier to change ourselves than change anyone else. And in learning, that's what we look for. What could we have done differently? What is the learning experience for us? And then, oops, I have a bit of a yeah. The next is now what? That is what we've been asking for in the retrospectives. What are you going to do with this next time? Are you going to try and make smaller tasks? Are you going to try to organize your project differently? So this is what we are interested in. Because if you never conclude, never say, what will we change next time? You won't learn. Learning will actually be to plan. And this is why we had this cycles. We were hoping that in one sprint, you would do something, you will sit down and say, okay, what happened? What were the consequences? And then what should we do the next sprint to try to improve, to try to deal with this in a better way? So that is the cycle that we like to see. And now you have one final sprint. So what I would suggest now is that you look at the expected learning outcomes, you look at what you have experienced so far, and say, what have you learned so far? What should that imply? And then what would you like to test? What would you like to do in the final sprint that would allow you to get even more experience, to test if your idea about how you could improve, how that actually works? And then final sprint, you can, after final sprint, before the final report, you can say what you did in the final sprint, you can say what you saw, what you observed, you can say what that implies, and you can say, in the future, this is what I will do differently. Any questions about this? Or comments?
So this technical report will be written by the whole group?
There will be one common part, one project team part, in which you describe everything, the whole setup, and you will have individual reports as well. You will have that where you reflect on your learning, your roles, your view, that is not repeating what's in the project report. It's your specific, because it's you're individually assessed. But of course, the contribution and most of the reflection is something that you share with everybody else on the team, because you have worked on the same team and have many of the same experiences. So we try to do that by having the shared report, which is the team report, and then you have your individual report. Yeah. Yeah. And the individual one will be more an addition to the discussion. Might be that you have an experience that is not reflected, is not described, and then you need to go through a little bit of describing and also. But in most cases, it will be mostly on the discussion part that will be individual. But in some cases, you will have to describe, because your view may not be what is the view of the or understanding of the rest of the team. So you may go into also say, okay, what we described in this and that case, my experience was that this was what happened, and this was, which is not a shared view. That may happen, but typically it's more on the discussion and reflection or internally things that is not described, because the team report doesn't say anything about your internal personal understanding and feelings. It's more what is shared by the group. And the report, you should find a good structure, as you said, but in general, you need to look at the artifact. I mean, what you developed, the code, design patterns, documentation, test strategy. They are mentioned in the expected learning outcome, and then the process, the your agile methodology, how did the planning, how did the retrospectives, what were the roles. You need to describe what you did, how you organized it, both the process and the product, and then discuss what you learn and what you think about the end results, both in terms of product and in terms of the way you worked and the style you ended up, because it's a development from the very beginning to the end, and that's the you would like to reflect on that development, and you would like to describe as a team where you in the end where you performing team, or were you still in the storming phase, or where were you? How far have you developed as a team and in using the tools and methodologies? And of course then the tools that you used. Jira, Confluence, Git, or whatever similar. And how you use them, how you set it up, how you use what you learn, how you will use them similarly or differently next time. Code assurance. Code reviews, testing, documentation. I've been asking about this today. That's to make sure that you understand this is important to address, it's important to discuss in the report. And as I said today, If you would like to discuss it, you need results to discuss. Results will be what did you do and what did you experience. So that's, you have one more sprint to make sure that these things are addressed. Question about the report. So this is the team report we talk about. You have a question?
Yes, I have a question. I may not write one. one of the, all of you guys will write scientific reports as well, right? Where you actually experiment and things like this. And this is slightly different here because it's like software development, right? So how do you evaluate your success, right? Is it just the tools you're using, burn-down charts, and the meetings we're having, or who would assess success fundamentally in such a project?
Yeah, the question is how to assess the quality of a project in this case. And if you looked at the details, you find that it's pass and fail. And one reason why the grading is pass and fail in this course is as it's extremely hard to define exactly how important is the product versus the process. So if you completely crash now in the next to the last sprint, and what you can put together in the last sprint is very little, could it then be an A project? Or would it have to be a C/D project just because you've crashed? Now, if you look at the learning outcome doesn't say much about the result quality. It says more about learning the tools methodologies. So because of that, I think if you crashed and if you learn from the crash, if you demonstrate that in the final sprint, now you really learn from it and you have a much better grasp on everything, then obviously you learn and you have met the outcome. So I think it's a bit fuzzy. But to me, the quality of the product is, number one, whether you have actually implemented a small prototype that users will be happy to use. I think that's what we're aiming at, and it is definitely still valuable. So last year we had a group having lots of excuses why none of the features were really fully implemented, and they got pestered. We were a bit hard on them on the examination just because of not taking the product seriously as well. But then the most important part, since the expected learn outcome talks about the process and the tools and methodologies, that's the most important part, that you show that you, through this project, have learned how to come into project and be a productive team member early on. Know the communication problems, know the group issues, know the what you're good at and not so good at in terms of technology and learning and setup. And that's what this course is about. I don't know if it answered your question, but it's...
Yeah, but
it is bit difficult. That's also why it's pass fail and not A to Z.
You have a vast diversity in expectations of the product owners, respectively, right? So
yeah,
that would be quite unfair there. But more generally, I mean, thinking beyond the course, right? You always need to think about what is your evaluation function, right?
Yes.
So what do you evaluate it against, right? In user experiments, you have statistical means and measures or empirical research. In software development, something a bit harder, right? So,
yeah.
And could be results in user testing, adoption, you know, so those metrics.
And it could also be pure quality measures, the code quality.
Right.
But in this case, it's a bit fuzzy on that. So it's more on the learning from doing it. Yeah, social security. No one has talked about security yet, and you need to think about security and security issues. I think Basil was talking about security. So it needs to be addressed a little bit, how you planned or didn't plan, and then what you can do in the last sprint to think about it, take it into consideration. Yep, so conclusion, different types of reports have different structure, and we talked about some of them. Writing is a skill. How do we get better at it? We do more of it, and we get as much feedback as possible. Seek feedback from the supervisors, possibly also from others. Last year we weren't able to, but we have tried to give you qualitative feedback in addition to pass-fail. So we tried to write a little summary for each report, what were the strengths and weaknesses seen from our perspective, in addition to the just the grades, because there's not so much to learn from the grades. I mean, okay, you passed. So what? Was it good? Was it not so good? Was it very good? Or what were the weaknesses? Where could you improve? So we're going to try. And last year, as I said, we didn't manage to, but I hope we're going to be able to this year. And if you don't see it early next year, start pestering us. That means Dipti and myself. These guys, they have other things students would pester them with. So, yeah. And I hope we should be able to do that. And then it's just about getting started. Start thinking about the report already. Start making some bullet points for the conclusion. Most of the project is done, so you know mostly what you can talk about. And then you can think about what you're going to do in the last sprint. And based on that, you can start summarizing a little bit and start putting together your ideas, bullet points, and small sentences, paragraphs here and there. But the complete work will happen after the final sprint. Very good. Any final questions? I consider the slide set as a resource, so it's there. Put on Confluence. So look it up, read it, go through it, think about it, see if as you are writing the report, maybe hopefully it's a help in writing a good report. Okay, good luck.